Hello and welcome to this episode of Superhero Ethics. Today we're talking about the TV show Loki. We're talking about the ethics of time travel. We're talking about does anybody have any agency. We're talking about how did the mouse do with queer representation. And we're doing all that with Paul Hoppe and Fox K. All that and more after a commercial break we have no control over. Welcome back. My name is Matthew. I'm your host. So glad to be talking here about Loki with two great guests. First, Paul Hoppe. Paul, how are we doing tonight?
Yeah, I'm good. A little bit sweaty because I got my fan turned off, but, you know.
Yeah, just so you all know out there in podcast land, those of us who are in hot weather climes generally have to turn off fans and things like that because they're going to make too much background noise. So we are suffering and sweating to bring you this podcast art. So please be appreciative or just think that we should get better central air. But that's a whole other story entirely. Joining me also is Fox K. Fox has been a guest of mine on a couple of different podcast episodes. Fox and I also did an episode on not the ethics of Loki necessarily, but a lot of questions raised by Loki on a different podcast. Fox and I went pretty deep into some...
That podcast episode isn't going to air because it tanked, so I don't know that you want to reference that.
Well, no, that's my whole point. Is that, like, I was going to make a joke about...
I'm sorry.
That's a variant? It's a variant.
It is a variant. The person lost the recording.
Exactly. Well, I was going to say, like, Fox and I had some strong opinions, and then the recording got lost. So,
yeah.
It was
a solid hour and a half of us telling the host that he was wrong. So, yeah. And then it magically disappeared. I was like, all right, Steve, I see you.
So... I knew I wanted to get Fox back, especially given some of our feelings about the episodes that happened. So there's a lot of great questions. But yeah, so Fox, how are you doing today?
I am doing all right. Sweating at a solid 79 degrees, but it's worth it.
So I'm really glad to have both of you on here. I think it's going to be a great conversation. I know we all have a lot of strong feelings about this show. And I want to start by kind of prefacing this, which is, as we always try to do here, our goal here is to not give a review of the show necessarily. I'm part of the Stranded Panda podcast network, where the MCU podcast, they do great. Like, they've done episode by episode reviews. They've been very positive about the show, but they definitely had some complaints. Definitely check out their podcast. There's a great way. They do a really great kind of review of the show. Here, what we're trying to do is say, like, this show, like a lot of other things we love, or a lot of the shows in the universes we love, raise some great questions. And both in terms of the story itself, and in terms of the more meta questions about how they told the story and how it was created. And I really want us to kind of focus on those today because I do have the impression that all three of us have some degree of strong feelings about the show itself that we'll get into to some extent. But I want to, and in some ways I'm a little sad that Ashley Coffin couldn't be with us. I know Ashley was a huge fan of this show and I would have liked to have more of that perspective as well. But Ashley did write in some great comments that we'll be reading on the air here. But I also just kind of want to make clear, like, whether you loved the show or didn't love the show, we're not here to tell you, like, if you should think the show is good or bad. We're just here to talk about, like, some of the issues and questions it raises. So, with that being said, let me kind of ask you both, what are your kind of general thoughts about the show now that we've seen all six episodes?
So, I'll kick it off by saying I didn't hate it.
Good positive start.
Right? I do have to commend Disney for doing what Disney does best, which is setting a very specific, giving us a very specific setting, and then especially we saw in the first four episodes, working really well within that very specific setting. And I think the design work on the show is beautiful. I do think, genuinely, I think we got a gorgeous show. The substance petered off drastically, I think, at the end. But I think unfortunately we got I think the show ended up falling to saga syndrome, and that is what it is. It's bound to happen with the MCU. And I think I honestly don't I'm not surprised, especially in the direction that the MCU is going, so it's definitely indicative of a larger problem. But at the same time, I do think we got an interesting show in terms of we got a character back that they had told us was gone forever, that a lot of people loved, that we got some very interesting development, some of it better than other parts. But we did get some interesting development. They found, and they did find a a narratively semi-sound way to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
So they certainly did that.
Yeah. I applaud you, Fox. You rolled very high on your diplomacy check, so well done. Paul, what about yourself?
Trying to keep people on the show for the rest of it. Just keep looking, like they have to get to the rest of it to hear my complaints.
I'd say I felt similarly and agree with a lot of the points that you made, Fox. I do think it was a beautiful looking show. I think it was a beautiful sounding show. I think the music was really good. It kept me invested in places where, like, I enjoyed a fair amount of the series minute to minute, but didn't enjoy almost any of the plot.
Yeah.
Like, what I just plot? Didn't, right? Yeah, like, I just didn't care what was happening, and there were specific things that annoyed me, but overall, it was just, I mean, I said this after the first episode, I felt kind of like I was waiting at the DMV with friends whose company I enjoyed, right. Where it was like the conversations were really well done and were often compelling, but then they would go and do something and I would be like, just stop doing things and just go sit and chat in the room again, because like none of what you're doing makes any sense or feels like it matters to me.
Yeah, I think it's a very good way to put it.
Aside from the genocide and all.
Yeah. After episode 5, I'd been in this odd situation where I realized I was trying to decide if I wanted to podcast about this show, because if I wasn't planning to podcast it, I honestly think I wouldn't have watched the last episode, because not out of a sort of a hate watch, like I don't want to see this, although I did turn off the 6th episode about halfway through and it took me like an hour to make myself go back to watch it. We'll talk about why. But it was after the 5th episode, I was like, this is fine. It's not the show that they told us it was going to be. It's doing all the things I was afraid it would do, but like, you know, Tom Hiddleston and Owen Wilson have great chemistry on screen. I like watching them talk to each other. I love the dialogue. I love the characters are all interesting. The story ideas are interesting if very poorly executed. But I realized that they'd gotten to the point where, this will kind of get us into one of our first ethical questions, but just on the kind of general sense of the show, I didn't, because of all they had done to say that everything can be undone and time has no meaning and it's all being controlled and nobody has any agency, I just didn't care. There was nothing about the story that made me think, there was nothing about the show that made me wonder what's going to happen in episode 6, because it all just felt so utterly meaningless. And again, I want to kind of honor, like, we have a particular perspective from the three of us. We were trying to get someone who has a very different perspective on the show on, but didn't work out schedule-wise. And I know that a lot of folks really love this show, and I think that's awesome. For those of you who got what you wanted out of this show, that's great. And I know Ashley wrote in some good things about why she loved the show that Paul wants you to read in a second, but I'm going to want to just honor that. You know, that, like, I think one of my favorite things that Disney has done is the fact that they have taken three very different approaches to television shows in terms of WandaVision, Falcon, and now Loki. I think they very intentionally said, we don't want every person to love all three of these. They were okay with the idea that some people are going to really love one and maybe be okay with the other and maybe not like the third. And to me, that at least is a positive direction for this kind of stuff, because it's much less about, the movies often feel like, let's get down to the lowest common denominator. Let's make sure we keep everybody happy. I like creatively if they're starting to say, like, we're just going to make some stories that some people are going to like and some people aren't. And this wasn't the story for me, but I'm not mad they made it, given that. I'm mad about some parts, but we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, I feel like inclusivity doesn't necessarily mean everybody's going to like a thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think often it can be having variety and having, ideally, something for everyone, right? But
right.
Different things that are going to appeal to different people. I would like to read a couple of things that Ashley wrote, because
sure.
They are very positive, right? So, like, maybe let's front load some of the positivity before we dig in on some things that,
hey,
maybe,
listen, Fox said they didn't hate it. That's very
true.
Positive.
That's true. Didn't hate. Ashley wrote this John about this John. That's some Philly talk, but I requested that we include that word in anything that was sent here to read on air. Anyway, so here's what she said. Okay, I'm at work, so there's probably a lot I'm going to miss, but I really loved this, John. I know people didn't like the pacing as much, but I felt like the faster we were moving, the less I had time to think if anything makes sense. I can totally relate to that for sure. Yeah. She also said, I loved the look and feel of the show. The music was unbelievable. Natalie Holt, yes, girl. And I mean, I really do think that the music really, like, it held my attention in a way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she included elements of, like, theremin to, like, traditional Norwegian stuff. I think maybe I'll read this time travel bit, too. And then,
sure.
Then we'll, I think it kind of sets up where you want to go. Let's see. I think after seeing the last episode, all the fast-paced stuff earlier was supposed to feel just like that. Then we get to Kang, they slow the pace down in favor of a thrilling conversation staging compared to the pacey action packed events of episodes 4 and 5. The finale for me really brought home themes of trust and free will. I loved the last few minutes being filled with philosophy and palpable tension, and the fact that those few minutes of the show will be what has major consequences for the future moving forward.
Yeah.
See, that's interesting that she brings that up. Just for her to name the last few minutes specifically, because I have so much conflict about what happened in the last episode, because I mm-hmm. felt genuinely after watching it, I commented to my partner and I said, I felt like I didn't just watch an hour of content. I feel like I watched a 20-minute conversation and then I guess some other stuff happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was one of those things that the conversation with Kang was absolutely, like, valuable. But for her to call, I wish she was here for me to ask her, but I feel like it's interesting because her commentary on the last couple minutes, which is the secondary Mobius conversation, and I felt that that had no value. Because, like, obviously we saw Loki, like, looking at the Kang statue and being like, ah, this is important. But really, when seeing that there's another Mobius variant in the TVA felt so, well, yeah, of course, to me, that I didn't get anything out of it. So I'd be in, that's honestly one of the first things that has made me think about how much of a different experience some people have had watching that show than I did.
Yeah, I think it's fair. And I think we'll likely get some feedback from Ashley on this. So hopefully we can bring that back into a feedback episode or something like
Call
that.
Call me back, Ashley. My number is.
I do think that maybe she was talking about the last few minutes talking to Kang.
Okay.
As opposed to, like, the kind of closing scene.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not certain, but I do think that feeling
Ashley,
of
call
like,
me back. My number is.
That feeling of, like, having a very different experience of the show, because watching, particularly being part of, you know, the Stranded Panda group on Facebook and seeing people be like, oh my goodness, you know, Kang, right. And like having this like huge amount of excitement going towards, you know, the new Doctor Strange and the new Ant-Man and the Spider-Man. And I'm sort of like, I maybe want to watch like Shang-Chi and then like not really so much with the MCU, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know, it's just, I guess depending on how interested you are in some of that, it's going to land very differently.
I think that's a good point. This kind of lets us get into kind of the first big ethical question we wanted to talk about, which is all the questions around time travel and like what that sets up for agency and consequences and things like that. And I'll start actually with one more moment that's kind of what you're talking about, Paul, of having a different experience of things. I've always said, I was the person who went into this saying I generally don't like time travel, because often for me the problem with time travel is that it can cause one of two problems. Either one, you set up the idea that nothing really has any consequences because you can always just kind of go back in time and fix it, or that nobody really has any agency, because if there is just kind of this one set timeline, you know, who's in control and what decides that? It explodes in all these logical loopholes and all sorts of things like that. For me, though, there was a particular moment in the show that really, for me, this was the moment where I really kind of got off the bus, both in terms of enjoying the show, but also in terms of feeling like I don't think I'm watching the same show that other people are, and it confuses me. And it was the end of episode 4. By the way, massive spoilers for Loki here. I think it's already been clear, but just in case you don't know. Because I was actually watching it live with a bunch of my friends on the Stranded Panda network. And, you know, two-thirds of the way through that episode, Mobius is pruned. And I burst out laughing. Because it was so obviously clear to me that of course he's not actually pruned, that everything we've learned is that none of this has any consequences, everything can be undone, time wibbly-wobbly, no one cares in the writing staff about consequences, and they're not going to get rid of Owen Wilson halfway through their own show. And then later on, Loki gets pruned. And once again, I don't think you're taking the title character out of your show two-thirds of the way into your show. If you are, it would be brilliant, and I kind of hoped they would. They didn't.
I mean, they have other Lokis. They have Lokis to spare, so they could have gone that way.
Hey, look, Loki is Sylvie's dead name, okay? So let's not use that name for Sylvie. Other thoughts on that, to be sure. Oh, yeah, no, yes. We got alligators and other sorts of Lokis as well, yes. Totally fair, true.
I'm all in on classic Loki.
There you go.
Classic Loki was the real champion. Also, let's go back to the music for a moment. The moment when he raised Asgard, that music deserves just its own moment.
Yes. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
So just to finish my point, though, and then I hopped on a video chat with a bunch of awesome people, and again, I'm totally respecting their opinions. This is just how I saw it. I was so ready for all of us just to be laughing about how stupid and ridiculous that was. And watching people whose opinions, like, I really trust and respect being so shook, it just utterly baffled me. Because I was like, how could there be any doubt that Mobius is not okay? Because it felt to me like the show had done so much to tell us that nothing has any consequences, you know, and that everything can be undone and it's just going to be whatever the whim of the writer or, in theory, Kang or whatever it was. So that's a little bit my rant about the quality of the show, but somewhat, I think it kind of leads into this question of, like, how did you feel they did with this idea of, like, using time travel to create consequences or to create drama or just to create, like, the kind of questions that time travel can raise?
I think the interesting thing that we got, I have my complaints about Sylvie and Loki's relationship, but the one thing that I do like that it put to the forefront was the focus on basically even through time travel, you experience connection and that there are still consequences for the actions that you make, that you are still their time travel for the most part. Independent variants aside, but when you travel, one of the things that we saw is when they did the time twister collars, that you went back in time physically, but you maintained your memories.
Right.
And I think that was kind of a larger issue, so to speak, is that was something about trying to think of a good way to phrase it, but like the steadfastness of character. And that's, you know, something that came up even in the last episode was people who change versus people who don't.
Right.
And so I think that was an interesting thing to take away the consequences of just the outside world, but it doesn't mean that the things that you did aren't indicative of your character. And we see that even with the conversation between Judge Renslayer and Mobius, where it's like, oh, you would prune your best friend, you know, and clearly he's not dead. He's fine. He made it out. But at the same time, there's still the consequences of, but you would do that to me.
Right.
So I think that kind of, it made the fact that time and, you know, just the permanency of your actions wasn't the consequence made me think more about, like, human motive.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. And I also kind of want to push back on the nothing having consequence. I think, like, when we see characters in shows, often I feel sort of like there's, like, a binary outcome. Like, either something kills someone or it doesn't. And, like, if it kills someone and then they come back, like, that there was no consequence. But, like, you know, suffering is still suffering, you know, like, and when we have these variants, it's like, you know, the one Loki was killed in Ragnarok, right? Not in Ragnarok, but, you know, the beginning of Infinity War that crapped on Ragnarok. But, like, that suffering still happened in that timeline. And, I mean, I think we'll get to that later, right, when we talk about Kang and the TVA and everything. But I know what you mean in terms of, like, there's not these consequences for the audience,
right,
in a way, because it, and to me, that's kind of like, this felt like the most comic book story I've seen on the screen, right? Where it's just like, comics are gonna comics, and like, comics are always bringing back heroes, villains, whatever. How long did Superman stay dead, you know? And then all of a sudden there's like four different Supermans or whatever. It's like, and they're like, oh, now we'll put him in a black suit. Doesn't it look cool? We'll sell more toys, you know? And I feel you on that. I personally, like, don't really care about that in and of itself. I know we've talked a lot about, like, character deaths in stories and stuff, you know? But I did feel kind of like, I didn't feel invested in some of the outcomes, even if there were consequences for the characters. Like, episode three felt like it was this whole, you know, thing that was completely irrelevant to any of the, like, plot. But at the same time, it was super important in terms of the development of Loki and Sylvie as characters.
Right.
So there was consequence, even though there's not, like, big plot consequence. Until the end, when that's actually, like, kind of really plays into the last episode pretty hard. I do agree that, personally, for me, it feels like there's not consequence in terms of, like, where the story or the multiverse or any of this is going. So I think, like, in terms of storytelling, I very much agree. In terms of the experience of the characters, I guess, is just where...
That makes sense.
Just to kind of separate. And I don't think we're that far apart on that, right? Because, like, when we get to them pruning people, like... I mean, we'll talk about that, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, Mobius certainly had a very negative experience being pruned. And I think, Fox, you made a great point there about how the break of trust between Mobius and Renslayer, that is a consequence that's definitely going to happen. I totally agree with you there in that regard.
Absolutely. I think it was interesting to observe the characters, you know, in that situation where they had the opportunity to relive moments, but at the same time, it did take away. I had kind of the same experience that you did when Mobius got pruned, and I was like, oh, well, that's not, eh. I didn't get they were very clear in the emotional impact that they were going for with that. That was their big shocker. And we all just kind of sat on the couch and went, eh.
Yeah.
So I think that they definitely, like, you know, by focusing so much on, you know, we can take it all back, that we all kind of went, well, yeah, you can take that back. It's okay, bud.
I did actually have somewhat of a reaction to that, partially because it was the third consecutive Disney Plus series where some authority figure who's basically a cop murders a person or tries to, like, shoot children.
That's fair.
You know, like, I was kind of like, I don't really like seeing this every series. You know, if you want to deal with an issue like that, sometimes okay. But, like, every single time, it just feels like a bit much.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, too. Well, and so what about on the other side of the time travel questions in terms of agency? Once we know, and first of all, it was the TVA saying, like, that they decide everything. And then by the end, we get Kang saying, he's not Kang. He's the one who remains. The Schrodinger's Kang, I'm going to call him. you know, once he clearly is saying that, like, he has lived
you
all
better
this before.
Copyright that, because I'm going to pop that into every MCU conversation from now on. I'm just
Kang.
Sliding that one in there.
Schrodinger's
Kang. Let's get the t-shirts ready.
TM, there we go.
I want a picture of that happy... I want the Loki poster. They just released it, and it's got him on it. I want that in a box, and it just says Schrodinger's Kang on the back. Someone make me the t-shirt.
There we go. I'm all for this. Let me get some rights. We'll use all the money to buy you some new recording equipment as well.
Oh, God, please.
But anyway, so once we kind of know, and now that Kang says that, like, you know, he knows what everyone's going to do, and that all these decisions are set because time has happened so many times before, or however the metaphysics of it work, what's your take on kind of what does that say about the agency of these characters and the stories that we have watched or may watch in the future?
They have none. but at the same time, those people actually made those decisions. Just all of the, you know, other Schrodinger versions of them that didn't make those decisions got pruned.
Right.
You know, which is, I mean, if you actually, like, study concepts of the multiverse, like, the number of branches, like, you wouldn't have an agency with, like, 20 people in it, like, erasing timelines, right? Like, the number of times timelines would split, it's, like, almost imponderable. But, so the whole premise, like, if you actually try and science it, is not you know, it's got some holes.
Yeah.
But it is a weird question. It's like, do these people have agency who are do, because they are making those choices.
Right.
It's just there's other versions of them that didn't make those choices and branch the timeline and then they get erased.
Right.
I'm also, I mean, we've had Schrodinger's Kang tell us that other variants of him are coming, and obviously that was implied to be like, ooh, woo, I have an army. But at the same time, I'm interested to see if we see that at all narratively going forward, of some sort of, like, almost for a shock, I could see it being a shock value of so-and-so did this thing. Oh my goodness. No, it wasn't them. It was their evil variant.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see that being good once, and then I would get very tired of it. And that's the kind of part where, again, like, time travel and, you know, evil clones and all of those concepts have been, you know, absolutely a pervasive theme through comic book history. But at the same time, it gets old, and it gets old fast. Mm-hmm. And I referenced it earlier when at the end of the episode, when they're basically showing us that there's another Hunter B-15 and another Mobius. And I was like, uh-huh, great. I don't care. Because, of course there is. There's 1,000 variants of everybody. We all make, you know, the wrong sacred timeline decision.
Right. Yeah, and I get that. And I think for me, I would hate it if they brought up this whole, like, you know, all bad things are just because of an evil variant. You know, I think that takes all the interesting thing about agency. And Paul, I hear what you're saying, that the character did make the choice. I think my issue with it is, maybe I'm misunderstanding this, although I don't think they went very deep on the metaphysics of it, is once you get into this idea that, like, one person has chosen that these decisions are the right ones and every other decision's the wrong one, and so we're only going to keep the future in which this person does the wrong one, right one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we all think Steve Rogers is a hero because from the very beginning he jumped on that grenade in basic training. Does every variant of Steve do that? Or is it like maybe only 5% of them do that, but all the others got pruned and so that's the only one that remains? Or maybe with Steve Rogers, it is 99.999% of him make that decision. But, you know, with Loki, at other points in the timeline, you know, the few times we've seen him do the right thing, like, maybe there's a whole bunch of Lokis that do decide to work with Thanos and throw Thor and the Asgardians under the bus. But they all get pruned. Say again?
Again, right? Because he did work with Thanos, right?
Yes, again, for sure. I guess to me, that's the thing. And, like, it's not that it's going to ruin all these other movies for me. I'm very happy to just ignore this because I think the story is just dumb. I don't think time travel stories just don't make any sense to me. But it just feels like once you open that up, it feels like it's just so fundamental. In some ways, this feels kind of like the blip. Like Marvel's doing the blip all over again, where they introduced this thing that's going to fundamentally change everything in our society and open up so many questions, and they never really dove deep into it. They sort of did with Falcon, they sort of did with Spider-Man. I don't really think they addressed, like, just how fundamentally the society would change and all the questions that it would raise. To me, that kind of feels similar here. Like, multiverse sounds cool, time travel sounds cool, but once we know that this Kang, that He Who Remains, or whoever, or TVA, or whoever it is, has basically been deciding, like, okay, this is the right version of Loki, this is the right version of Captain Marvel, whatever it is, and every other ones we got rid of, it fundamentally changes how I view the decisions that everybody's making.
I absolutely agree. I think that they tried to kind of pose the question of true character, mm-hmm. but they did it not only so late in the show, but so kind of, like, that I think is the one real thing that they hit on both consistently and clumsily when they got down to the heart of it, where it was like, well, this is your true character. You can't trust and I can't be trusted, I believe is the line. But at the same, just as much as that is something that, you know, was like, well, we're the same character. So this is our character trait. it is very much like this other person has effectively designed you. And of course, it's a little meta because comic books. But to say you are this character that we are supposed to feel for, that you are making, having this growth and making these decisions, that we care that Loki has gone through this thing where he does potentially trust another human being. But, oh, I allowed that to happen because that was the right decision. It takes away the agency and the impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I don't have too much to add. I just, you know, it's like, yeah.
Yeah. Paul doesn't have too much to add. Take a drink every time he says that, and then doesn't say anything more.
You'll stay sober for the rest of the night.
Exactly. I mean, all I would say is that now I've completely forgotten what I was going to say that I wasn't going to say in the first place. So you could just cut this part.
One drink. But, one drink.
No, I'm going to say something anyway. But I guess I've totally forgotten it again. I don't know. Whatever. What were you talking about?
Agency. All right, we're going to stick.
The idea that, this is where you just segue into the next thing, right? About, what is a variant? What makes someone a variant?
Great segue there. So for both of you, how do you feel about this topic of variants? And now that we know that, you know, each person can have, all these other versions of them out there that got pruned, but that they do exist to some extent or another. What's your kind of take on that approach to a character?
Okay, I'm going to swing this around, I promise, but does everyone here remember when they first learned about the butterfly effect?
Yes.
I don't remember the moment.
But you remember approximately. It was either the one dinosaur short story in school, or it was something to that effect. There's a short story, right? They go back in time that somebody steps on a, they say, don't step off the path. You step on a butterfly, you come back and no one can speak proper. Like no one speaks English. It's all some weird language because of the butterfly effect. That's the story. It is very simple, and that's why it's called the butterfly effect. Mm-hmm. But, for me, this reminded me of when everyone first learns about butterfly effect and they sit there thinking about how much, oh my goodness, every little thing that I do in the entire world, every breath I take, every move I make, I'll be watching you. And and it's going to affect the lives of my future children in such a monumental way. And then you learn about multiverse theory and you say every single decision you make, you could have made another decision and it could have been this big thing. And Marvel took that and they boiled it down to as simple as they could possibly get it. And they said, sometimes people make different decisions. And it's one of those things that, the multiverse theory is so complex. And so, and certainly they couldn't spend the entire time talking about it. But they figured that everybody had a good enough general idea to then go forward. And what I think the interesting thing that they did is that they created, with these Nexus events, they said that your variance isn't any decision you make, it's your big decisions. And I think that that's very interesting of what makes a big decision, because I think that some of my personal journey in my life, some of my big decisions haven't seemed that big. Until you look back and you go, wow, if that had never happened, then I would have never done this. I think that it would be very scary to have someone to do something you think is, okay, I'm going to go to the beach. And then somebody, a space cop comes out and arrests you. So I think that what constitutes a big decision is a very interesting thing. If I could come from Marvel's soul about anything, the fact that we never got Sylvie's Nexus event, I fundamentally crave that as knowledge. I want to know what her Nexus event is, because that's her defining moment, right? Like, that's her thing that kicked... That's her villain origin story.
Right.
And we don't know because they didn't care enough to tell us.
Yeah.
But I think that was very interesting. But I do think that we got variants as sort of a comedic thing with Kid Loki.
Yeah.
But I also think that we got a the classic Loki's, I missed my brother. That was such a nod to a core part of the character. mm-hmm. that I thought that was very emotionally valuable. So I think that posed an interesting thing as well. So when you have this big decision that you would think is very much like core to the character, but it's wrong. So what makes, you know, then it goes back to the it goes right back to the agency thing. What makes it the right decision if the core of your character is wrong?
Right. Yeah, I think it is such an interesting question, especially because when you're talking, I kept thinking of the movie Sliding Doors, which isn't one of my favorite movies by any means, but poses some interesting questions about, like, you know, sometimes it might be your big decision, like, do I go to grad school? Do I take a job? Do I move to this city or this city? Do I accept this proposal? But sometimes it can be just like, do you get on the bus, you know, a stop late or not? Because you meet someone on the bus who will change your life forever, whatever it is. And Sliding Doors is an interesting exploration of that. And I think you're right. I think there's a real potential for the show. And it did somewhat to explore that question of, like, what makes someone fundamentally who they are? You know, you'll often see this meme go around that talks about, like, if you could go back and do one thing just to fundamentally change history, what would you do? And that the answer is often, I would let Hitler into art school. Because of, like, this idea that, like, you know, there's one theory that him not getting into art school and there being Jewish people on the judging panel and things like that, that sort of, he would have gone in a whole other direction. I have trouble thinking that. I have trouble thinking that just, like, one decision like that could change someone so fundamentally. And obviously that is, like, the definition of the extreme case. But I think that would have been a great question to explore if we'd really had so much more time with the Loki variants, you know? To explore what happens if you have basically the same character, but the gender is flipped, you know? And that flips a binary term, but, you know, but a different gender. That would have been so interesting to explore. It's funny because it's a frustration almost, because I think there could be so much great stuff to explore of, you know, what makes one of these Lokis want to be the presidential person, and what makes one of them the, you know, the one who did kill Thor, the one who does betray. Like, to me, I think you're really touching on something that could have been a phenomenal thing to explore, and maybe they will explore it in later season. I'd certainly be open to it if they did.
I mean, I think, like, maybe Hitler could have just been an anti-Semitic artist. Instead Possible. Of, like, a dictator, you know, Possible. like people might not change in their fundamental character, but they might change in terms of the power and influence they wield in the world.
Yeah.
Like, with a few things, like, say if CNN hadn't excessively covered Donald Trump in 2015, maybe he never becomes president, you know,
right.
But, like, you know, that's in terms of, like, what makes someone who they are, like, that, I mean, that's identity, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of different ways of looking at identity. Personally, I feel like I look at it differently than most people do, or most people, the way people discuss it these days. But I respect that other people look at it the way they do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really up to someone what they think makes them who they are. And I feel like with Loki and Sylvie, like, they kept calling Sylvie a Loki or whatever. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, first of all, there should be all totally just different people in different timelines, right? Like, you're not necessarily going to get the number of timelines there would be is so, like, it makes that 14 million number from Infinity War so
right.
infuriating. Like, how few 14 million variations of time would really be, you know, in the scheme of things. But, like, just narrowing down on, say, Loki and Sylvie and, you know, anyone else who's a Loki, like, what makes them the same person or not the same person? Like, Sylvie clearly, in my view, does not consider herself a Loki.
Right.
Right? She considers herself Sylvie. And what does that mean? And we really never got a satisfying answer to that, and maybe they're, like, holding out for season two or something. That's kind of my guess.
Yeah,
is, you know, like, a lot of the variant stuff was played for laughs, right? Like in episode 4 or 5, really.
Mm-hmm.
Where they have all these different Lokis and, like, you know, they're not all human, and, you know, it, but that to me kind of sort of cheapens the idea of, like, they didn't really dig into it. They're like, oh, what's your Nexus event? It's like, I don't care about a Nexus event. I care about, like, who are you, and what makes you you, and why do you think that makes you the same as this other person, or different, or, you know, I don't know. I think it's a potentially interesting question that I do not feel was really explored in an interesting way. In a satisfying way, anyway.
Yeah. I think for me, especially where that comes up with Sylvie, is that, you know, it's funny, ever since the kiss, there are all these things popping up about, oh my God, it's the total narcissism, you're kissing yourself. I never really bought that they were the same person.
Yeah.
I felt like they had a lot of the same perspectives on things, a lot of the same, to me it more felt like, yeah, if you give two people the same childhood trauma, they're going to have a lot of the same triggers and a lot of the same responses, but they're probably not going to be exactly the same. And especially because they did have fundamentally different childhoods. You know, they felt to me like two different people who maybe, I don't know if they shared like genetic makeup, but you know, she had a different chromosome for gender, or I don't know. It just left me very unsatisfied because, yeah, I think that there's so much you could have gone with it. But even more, like, I never really bought them as anything other than two separate characters.
I would tack on to that. All the other Loki variants also don't feel like Loki. They feel like different characters who are called Loki, some of whom are played by Tom Hiddleston and some aren't.
Right.
And there's nothing that seems like quintessentially Loki about them. And so I think it's easy to see like Loki and Sylvie and be like, oh, maybe I see them differently because I see one as male and I see one as female. But it's like, it's not that. It's that they're two different people that we're not, that share things in common, right? But there's a lot of people who share things in common, and I don't know.
No, I don't disagree, and I think it's interesting that the way that they define the consistency, that, you know, this is the story, this is the way it's going to be. The interesting thing to me especially is that we do touch on multiverse theory a little bit in that, you know, they weren't all pruned at birth. None of them were. They were all, you know, Kid Loki is the youngest one, and he's, what, 8, 10, 12? So clearly, until they made whatever their Nexus event decision was, they were meant to live out their lives. So clearly, there is not just one sacred timeline. There are many variations of this one story, this one person, meaning that they're different people. So I think that that's a very interesting part of it as well, is that they're different people. And even if they're going through, you know, if you put enough people through the same experience, you're going to get some, you know, people with enough similar traits, some people are going to react similarly if they have, you know, the same opinion on some things. And then absolutely we have Loki and Sylvie being different people going through similar situations and making the same decision, and people being like, oh, well, that makes them the same. No, right. If someone throws a big, scary fire at you, you're going to try and stop it because you don't want there to be big, scary fire. That's not you being the same person. That's you having the motive of, I don't want to die. Like, oh, right. Well, if we work together, we can defeat this thing. Well, gee, we should work together. That is not a difficult.
Yeah.
It's not rocket surgery.
And to me, I think it's so important as well because it's where I think the narcissism point I totally lose, because to me, what Loki fell for in her, which I have a lot of strong feelings about, which will be our next topic, it didn't seem because she was often doing things differently than he was. And he loved that. And he was like, that's so interesting. Like, I could be more like you, or you make me want to be like less like you in some instances. But none of it was about falling in love with himself in that regard.
I think the other interesting thing is that I think the fact that Sylvie isn't Loki was very much emphasized when they are in, you know, the void of everything, and you know, Loki's like, oh my gosh, you guys, you know, there's a female version of us. Way on Marvel to put a gender fluid character in and tout that right up until the binary was beneficial, first of all. But second of all, to basically feature the fact that she is completely different than any and all of them. Again, that still not being her Nexus event, but I think it absolutely was just one more thing that means they were different characters. They were different people. Right. And I think that he recognized that. I think that part of it was, you know, our Loki, quote unquote, recognizing that she was completely different from him. I do think that Marvel absolutely, kind of going back to the gender fluid thing, I do think that Marvel absolutely dropped the ball on that. To be fair, and all of their queer representation, I think that they very much dropped the ball on, in terms of, you know, they did just enough to get cookies. Mm-hmm. But I think that I think that especially with a gender fluid character in particular, and with the concept of variance, I think that you could have done so much with that. I think that they had a really interesting opportunity. They had something that was very, they set themselves up to succeed and then failed. Because I didn't have confidence in Marvel going forward with it, but I absolutely did have to, like, you have to recognize that that was a really cool idea. I almost hope, like, I said on in another conversation with someone that I hope to see Loki do some sort of, you know, transformation. We've seen him transform into other people and other, you know, forms. Obviously, we know that's a trait of his, both from Norse mythology and, you know, MCU canon. And I was like, yeah, okay. So have him shift into a stereotypical, like, quote-unquote woman.
Mm-hmm.
Have him shift into Sylvie, if you must.
Right.
It was kind of right in front of them. And they put a lot of information into the first four episodes. And then by the time they slowed down, the couple of things that they had set up that would have really mattered to a lot of people, unsurprisingly, they didn't care.
Yeah. To me, it is the worst example of, like, honestly, it's one of the things that makes me the most mad about the show, as well as the other part of queer representation that we'll get to in a second. But there's a degree to which the character of Loki, from both comics and from Norse mythology, there's a lot there that there's probably, you know, I didn't expect Disney to be all over covering. You know, I didn't expect to see Loki giving birth to the horse that he'd had sex with. Like, or that, you know, the horse that resulted from Loki as a female horse having sex with another horse. You know, however the story goes. I didn't think we were going to get that. Frankly, I didn't think we were going to get any of Loki's gender or sexuality fluidness. But then they told us that we were. There was a quick little moment where Loki, like, it listed the gender as gender fluid. And then the writers, I don't remember the exact detail, and it's probably possible that this got made into more than it was meant to be. But to me, it's something you need to be so careful about. The impression certainly got from the things the writer said was that they really were going to dive into exploring Loki as a gender-fluid character. And to me, to set that up and to tell audiences that have been so hungry for representation that, yes, you're going to get to see yourself on screen in a way, and then not deliver, and as you said, kind of to miss all the low-hanging fruit that could have been gotten so easily, it's an outrage to me. It is just, it is so, it makes me so angry I don't really have words. But it just feels like, it's one thing to be cowards and not want to tell that story, but then don't make people think you're going to tell that story. You know, don't put gender fluid on the bio of, because that was the bio of this particular variant of Loki. It wasn't saying that, like, all of Loki's throughout all of time are gender fluid. Because, I don't know, maybe all of the people who are Matthew Fox, you know, maybe there's a version of me in some variant time universe in which the genetics were a little bit different or whatever. I'm being very clear, I'm not meaning to say that genetics are tied to gender in the slightest. But certainly the show seems to think that they are. You know, we don't have any indication of Loki chose to have a male presentation or Sylvie chose to have a female presentation. Like, none of that. There was so much they could have explored there. So yeah, to me that was just, I'm really glad you explained it that way because, you know, it's not the only thing to talk about, but just from an ethics perspective especially, like, I think Marvel really dropped the ball here.
I think that actually you just referenced another opportunity that they had, which would have been if Sylvie's Nexus event had been that she decided to present as a woman.
Yeah.
That was absolutely a potential. That was something they could have done. You could have shown it very quickly with, you know, again, abilities that we've seen Loki having. It would have been a minimal effort insertion into the story.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I made the comment about maybe Loki being Sylvie's dead name, because I kind of like that idea that that's exactly what happened with Sylvie, but we didn't get it.
I kind of expected that's where they were going to go after all of the talk of... Mm-hmm. Having, you know, exploring that and having that kind of representation. And it felt more like it really was a lot more talk
right.
than, like, they said these things, right?
Yeah.
But they didn't really show them. And, yeah, I think that being Sylvie's Nexus event, like, I mean, whatever thoughts I have about Nexus events and the ridiculousness of that, like, I think that would have been interesting and also maybe powerful in terms of sort of, I don't know, like, as a metaphor, how, like, maybe people, you know,
yeah.
in the world don't deal with that very well, what, you know, when they find out what someone's gender is and they had a preconception. And I think, like, clearly they have that power, right? The Lokis mm-hmm. or the Sylvies and I mean, we've seen Loki be Sif before, right? Or take and, the form of
Captain
Sif.
America as well.
Yeah.
And Captain America, exactly. And so clearly, you know, that person, whatever you want to call them, can easily physically take the form that they feel best represents themselves. And that's like, that seems like a great way to be able to put that there without without having some of the complexities maybe that you'd have in the real, you know, in something that's more right. represents people's actual real world experiences, right? It's like almost like an easier way to do it in terms of portraying it in fiction. And it does feel like they were just very cowardly. It feels very Disney,
yeah.
right? In terms of, to me, like, being like, oh, we're gonna, that was enough, right?
Yeah.
You're good? Like, you know, which, I mean, I think you're gonna get into the, you know, the question of Loki being bi or pansexual. And, like, they said that. They had a line, right? But, like, did that feel like real consequential representation to you?
No, absolutely not. I think that I 100% agree with you that it wasn't consequential representation, that they did just enough to get us to associate as queer people with the character and to latch onto that and say, oh, well, he's one of us, so we love him extra and we will give you all our money. Like, thank you, Daddy Disney. But it wasn't enough. And I think that that's something that we go forward to tell queer stories I think consequential queer stories, I think that's a very, you know, I like that phrasing a lot, to tell queer stories, not just, you know, whatever kinds of stories they are, that you can't take out the one line and make it palatable for people who don't want them to be queer, that people are queer in their whole lives. You know, I wake up and I'm queer, and I go to work and I'm queer, and I, you know, go to lunch and I'm queer, and I come home and I'm still queer. And that is a part of my life. And it should be the same in the shows, that it's not every pervasive moment, you know, but at the same time, it is an unremovable part. It needs to be an unremovable part of the story.
Yeah. It did really strike me that, you know, if you want to make a version of this to show in, you know, to areas that don't want to see that, you can just cut those 15 seconds and nothing about the rest of the story will change.
Yeah, like 5 seconds.
Even. Yeah, really. And it's funny because, you know, Paul and I recently did an episode on animated stuff, which will actually air after this one.
Mm.
We didn't really go into Mitchell's versus the Machines, which is one of my favorite new movies. But I'll say that movie does the exact opposite. You know,
mm-hmm.
the queerness of a character is a very small thing. But literally every scene she's on screen, she's wearing a rainbow pin, you know? And it's such a, to me, that felt like a very deliberate, like, you can't cut this out. This is just who the character is. I do also want to kind of go a little deeper here, especially because for some folks who haven't really thought about this much, I have heard from a lot of folks the idea of, like, well, like, bisexual people or pansexual, they never use a label. You know, do you love people of both or all genders or very many different genders? So Loki falling for a person presenting as a woman should be fine, right? Fox, why was this not a good example of bi or queer representation?
I think that in part because, to me at least in particular, I felt like, so I have certainly, if it had been like, first of all, that entire subplot didn't really feel organic to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a part of that was especially that kind of leading up to this, you had had a lot of emotional emphasis on Loki and Mobius's relationship. And if you'll notice, in the story, the moment they establish that Loki's attracted to men at all, the distance between Mobius and Loki as characters grows.
Yeah.
And you get the one moment of them hugging each other goodbye, and that's it. Other than that, they have very limited actual interaction and actual moments of emotional closeness. And again, if that had been just the relationship as a whole, it would have been one thing, but it was that immediately following the possibility of Loki being attracted to not just this man, a man at all, they wanted to make it very clear that that's not what this was. We didn't do that. This wasn't gay. And I didn't need to be no homoed.
Yeah.
In my TV shows just as much as I am in my real life. It's okay. I would have been agreeable to a Mobius and Loki romance or relationship. I wasn't necessarily sitting there with a deep need for it, but at the same time, for them to so aggressively, like I said, no homo it. Yeah. It made me uncomfortable almost in that way as a queer person who is attracted to multiple genders, literally in that way of someone saying you like girls, you better not flirt with me. It was that feeling. It was that experiential disgust of, oh, well, you're attracted to people like me, so obviously you're attracted to me. And it felt like queerness written by straight people. It felt like non-consequential queerness written by people who didn't know what they're talking about and didn't know what would be actually impactful for people who would relate to this character. And then following that sour going into the consideration of the Sylvie Loki situation with such a sour undertone, even if it had been what I don't believe it was very I didn't like it very much, and I didn't think it was super well written. But at the same time, even if it had been beautifully written, I still would have viewed it with a sourness because of that experience.
I guess I have two questions. One, if it had been both, like if there had been some clear romantic interest between Loki and Mobius for a bit, and then there was between Loki and Sylvie, would that have played differently?
I think for me, it very much would have, because this is kind of building on what Fox was saying about the no homo. There is no need in the plot for Loki and Sylvie to have romantic feelings for each other.
Yeah, yeah.
The love they have could be a sibling love, and then could cause really interesting questions for Loki about why that didn't happen with Thor. That there could be, I know in some versions of the story, there's a parental dynamic one way or the other. It could be just pure narcissism of, like, you're a version of myself that I get to love.
Sure.
And also to remember, like, we haven't seen Loki be a playboy. This is literally the first time that Loki has ever expressed romantic interest in anyone. And for it to come so quickly, right at Loki declares that he's bi, or that he's, you know, Loki says that, like, princes and princesses, that, you know, both or all have happened. And then to go so strong into this romance that was not needed at all, it really felt like the show was saying, no, no, he likes girls still. Don't forget. He likes women. He really, really does. We promise. Look, they're even kissing. Won't even have subtext. 100% subtext. 100% full text. It really felt like they were saying, yes, we like checked off the queer box, but don't worry, straight people, you still can love this show. We're not going to...
Right.
And to me, here's the thing. Yes, that's always what Disney has done until Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Because Falcon and the Winter Soldier, they checked off the racism box. And then the next episode, they checked off a couple more boxes. And then they checked off more. They just threw it on the table. Even Steve Rogers can be subject to white privilege and can miss things, you know, and be part of white supremacy in that way. They went so deep and so hard on racism and didn't care who they angered.
Yeah.
That for them to then be so cowardly about this show, it just, I think that was for me, and maybe I put too much on a Falcon, it was one more part of the false hope for me. But that's my take. What about Fox for you? Would that have changed it for you?
So two things that I want to respond to. Paul, I want to respond to yours as well as I want to respond to what you said, Matthew. So Paul, I think so. But again, honestly, it was so much Matthew made the point already, kind of, for me, where it was that they went, even if they had maintained the relationship platonically between Mobius and Loki at the same intensity as they had, and mm-hmm. even if they hadn't gone romantic on it,
yeah.
I think I would have been more okay with it. I think it was the almost rejection that they went, that the final hug was really the only thing that we got.
Yeah.
And I feel like that, and it also then, because then it continued to me with regardless of the Sylvie relationship, regardless of him being attracted to and interested in a woman, it also then kind of implied that men who are attracted to men cannot, that gross, like, you can't have friendships with the people you're attracted to. You can't right. have deep emotional connections with people. They had such an opportunity, as back when we were speaking on, kind of when I said that the show taking away the consequences of time and your actions, what it did was provide a character study. And I think that if we had just continued to explore emotional connection,
mm-hmm.
I would have been more satisfied with that kind of story.
Right.
And then Matthew, with bringing up Falcon and the Winter Soldier addressing racism in a very well-written way, and it was obviously a fantastic, you know, a fantastic show. But I think the unfortunate thing for me is that we got that kind of unexpectedly. They didn't initially say, this is the show addressing the racism behind right. the Captain America story, and then give it to us. That we found out that was going to be the experience in watching it. And again, it was beautifully done. But this felt worse, because mm-hmm. not only did they not address it well, but they told us they were going to. So instead of, you know, having this experience and saying, well, we don't care, in addition to the fact that they have shown that they're willing to anger people to make an emotionally valuable point, they didn't do that here and then said they would.
Yeah.
That they hung a carrot on a stick and said, look, doesn't it look good? Isn't queer representation so important? Oopsie, guess you don't get that. And I don't like being teased. Give me my fucking carrot.
So it's like they under-promised and over-delivered in Winter Soldier and Falcon and Captain America. And over-promised and under-delivered in Loki, basically.
I think it's a really good way of putting it.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm just saying what you said.
Yeah.
Trying to make
it
sound
snappy. It was
nice,
clean phrasing. Thank you for writing the thesis of my paper, Paul.
I'm a copy editor at heart, so.
There you go. Well, we could go so deep on this, and I will say a lot of other great queer creators on TikTok, on articles and stuff like that, have really been writing great things about why this show was such a disappointment, really such a betrayal, and I really recommend people check some of those out. But let's go into one of the main areas that Sylvie and Loki disagree on. Do you kill Schrodinger's Kang? Team Sylvie or Team Loki? What are we on?
Oh, Sylvie all the way.
Yeah. Why for you do you kill Kang?
I mean, because he's an autocrat who genocides entire, you know, universes. Like, I just think if you have the opportunity to kill a dictator who is massacring people, like, you just do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can, like, take away their bending, then I prefer that, you know. But we're not all in Avatar. And, like, that line where Kang or Immortus or He Who Remains is like, we're all villains here. I'm like, but are you all villains? Like, is Sylvie really a villain?
I feel like there's a scale of villainy, buddy, and you're probably the top of it.
You're
like,
at the top.
Genocide is pretty bad.
Yeah.
Loki's not that far behind, having tried to genocide all the Frost Giants. And, you know, like, behind. I mean, not universes, but, like, worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, Sylvia's, like, she's killed some people who have stolen her as a child and repeatedly tried to murder her and erase her existence. Like, that's just not villainy. That's survival.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
Sylvie killed a couple of cops, and then the cop called her a bad guy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm pretty happy with Sylvie in kind of like anti-hero, like gray villain space. And to me, I don't see how there's any question. You know, and to me, the fundamental thing that comes to, because the response is always, but what about the chaos? What about all the things that will happen? You know, the dictator is holding on to order, mm-hmm. and a lot of people are going to suffer in chaos. And frankly, This feels like it's a question that's incredibly relevant both for our own world and that it's popping up again and again in our fiction. I don't think that's coincidental. And it certainly seems like, you know, we've talked a lot about this on the Star Wars podcasts about, you know, in the Star Wars world, people seem to like the Empire, some of them, because, you know, to quote the Mussolini line, like, they make the trains run on time. And
right.
I think there's a really interesting statement there about the fact that people crave order, they crave stability, and they're often willing to give up huge amounts of their freedom to get it. And to me, it's the choice that is most important. You know, if a whole bunch of people in a very chaotic setting say, listen, we voluntarily want to elect a autocrat of some kind to take control and to bring order, I'm going to vote against them, but at least I understand, like, there's a choice that's happening there. I'm not comparing that to current situations because I don't think actual democracies happen. Anyway, I'm thinking there very much hypothetically. But my point being that for me, Kang, like, that I think is very bad. My point is just that Kang to me is fundamentally worse because Kang just decides for other people. There is, you know, and here we're now talking about the agency as in the world itself. What Kang does literally is just to deny everyone else any agency whatsoever. And I don't think it matters how bad the multiverse is. I don't think it matters how chaotic that's going to be. For any person to have that power and to decide, I know what's best for everyone else, and so I'm going to do it, and I'm going to genocide trillions of people to do it. But even putting that part aside, just the, like, that level of control, you have to kill that person, or you have to stop that person if you can without killing them. But, like, to me, that's, it's kind of a no-brainer, I feel like.
Yeah.
I also think that the interesting thing is that the other option, Loki's option, is essentially to listen to this guy who says, like, yes, I've had all this power forever and ever, and it's been really great, guys. I've decided I don't want power forever and ever. I'm going to go take a nap. And and I am pro naps all the way.
Naps are the best.
But it, like, yes, every nap I denied myself as a child, I will regret for the rest of my days. But at the same time, I think it's very interesting that you listen to this all-powerful person being like, yeah, you know what? I'm just going to hand it all in. You guys can deal with it. And I think Marvel has done this before with Thanos as well, where it's like, I am going to achieve ultimate power. And that's it. That's all I want. Then I'm done. Mm-hmm. And it's this, like, the bold implication that anyone who is power hungry enough to get to that level can be satisfied. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, ah, yes. You know how people don't work at all. So it's one of those things that I'm like, even if we had seen Loki win in that argument and we had seen Kang go free, all of us would have sat there and gone, season two, guess who's coming back? Mm-hmm. Not a single one of us would have believed that that was it. So I think that realistically, just not only narratively, but realistically, Sylvie was right. And that was the only option.
Right.
There's no Nexus event here.
Yeah, I find it, like, this series to me really kind of underscored, like, how much people are willing to accept whatever is told to them by someone presenting themselves as an authority from the very first episode where people are like, oh, the sacred timeline, that makes sense. It's like, whoa, yeah. You know, and then like, oh, the Time Lords, they're clearly in power. I'm sorry, did I call them the Time Lords? Are they the Time Keepers?
I mix up
the DC and Marvel identical characters sometimes. But, but like,
one of them wears a fez to make it unique.
Right. But then, like, Kang or whoever he is at the end, the, you know, who remains, like, he's just like, oh, this is the thing. And Loki's like, oh, okay, yeah. Loki, who doesn't trust anyone, is like, I think he's telling the truth, you know? And, like, we should give it some thought. It's like, kill him and then give it some thought. You always stab everybody. Like, just stab him and then figure it out, you know?
I was with you as an ethical statement up to you always stab everybody.
Well, I'm just saying, if you're the guy who always stabs everybody, you don't not stab the guy who's been genociding universes.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Some consistency here.
Yeah, you know? I think that's, well, I have a lot of thoughts on the consistency of Loki, because I think there's none whatsoever.
In a television show about how nothing matters and there are no consequences to your actions, have some consistency in your actions, damn it.
Exactly.
You know, like, I don't understand the metaphysics they set up at all, but I'm pretty sure that even by their own, like, very flimsy rules, the idea that he crosses a time threshold and all of a sudden, it made no sense. It was so
dumb.
Don't
get me started on that one.
We have to all just mutually agree that that has to be a separate episode of itself, because we can't open that can of worms.
That's the whole thing.
Let's all just put it on the shelf. Let's glare at it for 3 to 6 seconds.
Okay. Yeah. So I actually wrote in something that's very similar to what we said. I thought read it, and said that she had said on the MCU cast, all of this felt very Star Wars to me. Strike me down, yada yada. I don't believe or trust anything Immortus said, though for Loki to call him terrifying actually means something. Do I think they should have talked it out a bit? Yes. Would that have been historically Loki of her? I guess of Sylvie? Yes. Do I think that was exactly what Kang wanted her to do? Yes. The two of them being the correct people to run time just makes no sense to me. And going through all of this just to end up back at the same point seems way too easy. Either way, I cannot see where we are. Oh, either way, I cannot wait to see where we are going with all this. So that's back to the original thing. Wait, somewhere she said that I think they should kill him, right?
Yeah, I think she was pro death.
I feel like
Kang.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm pretty sure that's what was in there, but I don't see it now. Yeah. So I don't know.
The timekeepers have changed it. The interesting thing to me as well is that I think for me, the only thing that I got out of like there being romantic anything between Sylvie and Loki is that I do think that kind of with the like there's no reason they should run time, I genuinely, in my opinion, when I was viewing that, I took that as him just trying to get someone on his side. I just took that as, well, the two of you can be together forever. And then it was supposed to hurt a little extra that Sylvie didn't want that. And I think we saw that a little bit. But again, I wasn't emotionally invested enough in their relationship. So when she betrayed him, I was like, same.
Yeah. Yeah. And we made sort of a comment about the believability. For me, if we had more time, I'd want to dive a lot deeper into the character of Loki, because it's, to me, like, the other reason why the Sylvie story felt so forced is I just didn't buy it in the slightest. Like, it didn't make any sense to me that he would make that dramatic a turn. Maybe we have time, we can get into that, but kind of just putting a pin in that. One thing else we've talked about, like, Loki in different genders and things like that. I wish we could also talk about, like, different race, gender Loki, but that was completely unmentioned. Mm-hmm. But we also get Loki, like, outside of Homo sapiens sapien, like Loki as a non-human. Paul, someone who has strong feelings about animal representation and things. How'd you feel about Loki as an alligator?
Like, I liked the idea that was a thing, but I'd say I feel kind of similarly to what, you know, you've both been saying about queer representation, where it's like, they were like, oh, see, like an alligator can be an important character in the world. And then, like, he's basically just hanging out and gets thrown at someone. Like, can an alligator go attack someone on their own? Like, do they need someone to throw them? Does he need to do get help? Like, and they weren't even doing get help, really, you know? Yeah. But, and, like, people have made jokes about that and, like, how they kind of enjoy that. And there's a lot of jokes about it. But it's, like, it feels to me like, sort of, I don't know. I like characters with non-human. I like fiction with non-human characters.
Yeah.
Who are people, you know, who have personalities and are characters that matter. And I did not feel like Alligator Loki was a character who mattered.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, Black Loki wasn't, like, he was there, but, like, that was just kind of, they're like, yeah, why not? We'll just do this.
Right.
And it felt to me like they're kind of hand-wavy, sort of representing, like, oh, yeah, you don't have to be human to matter. And for the whole time, I was like, why are all of these people so human? Like, the TVA.
Oh, yeah.
It makes sense once you understand that, you know, it's Kang, and Kang, I guess, is human from the 31st century it seems, right? So now I'm like, okay, so the sort of pro-human bias in the TVA actually makes sense within the story, and so I'm like, okay with that. But until then, I was sort of like, this is odd. But yeah, that just felt like something that was potentially interesting, but then was very disappointing.
Yeah.
You know what it had the energy of to me is when, like, and this is kind of like, people do this as a joke, but when it's like, oh, if we were frogs, would you sit on a lily pad together with me? Like, it's that sort of, like, it's cutesy as a concept, but there's nothing behind it. You know what I mean? There was no, like, there's no actual value to it. It's, you know, that is to pose the conversation of, if we were in a different situation, would we still have connection? Alligator Loki was a joke twice, and that it was funny, I guess.
Yeah. And I think it's important to know, like, I'm not a comic book fan. I don't think any of us are, like, hardcore comics readers. A lot of these things were Easter eggs for the comic book fans. Mm-hmm. It felt like this show had a lot more of those, and
yeah,
especially with Kang, but also some of the Alligator Loki stuff. A lot of the other shows I felt like did a very good job of having an Easter egg, but that if you didn't get the Easter egg, you still didn't miss anything. This show felt like it kind of crossed the line in that regard. And I felt like the alligator thing especially because for me, I don't know much about Loki from the comic books. I do know something about Norse mythology.
Yeah.
And in Norse mythology, a god having their hand bitten off by an animal is a very important story. Tyr having their hand bitten off by the wolf, Fenris. And so I was kind of like, wait, is this a reference to that? Is it? No, it just seemed like it was just like, yeah, let's have present Loki have his hand bit off.
Right.
So, yeah, I was curious, Paul, where you're going when you said you wanted to bring that up. But I think it's a really good point. If you're going to explore that Loki could be a non-human, and what would that mean? Explore that, you know? Like, it felt like so much of the show was, let's just check all these boxes and kind of dip our toe into all these different pools, many of which would be fascinating ethical questions, but never really commit to actually, like, the consequences of any of those possible stories.
Yeah, I feel that for sure. I will say that we are recording this podcast on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah, right? That's true. So that's true, good point.
This is actually, I guess, appropriate. I don't know. But yeah, it did feel like it was kind of like, oh, how about this? How about this? How about this? Like, but we don't really want to deliver on things that much. And even to that extent, which I think is one of the later points that maybe we were going to get to, is like, it felt like the end of this show was very much just to, like, set up what was going to come next, you know, as opposed to really having a satisfying conclusion to a singular coherent story.
Absolutely. I think that's the one thing that, is my major complaint between, obviously, Marvel having released these three television series between as kind of the gap, the transfer between their sets of movies. And as we go into the next phase, it really did feel like they did, you know, WandaVision was much more like a concept exploration and, you know, about the exploration of grief. And that was very interesting the way it was. Falcon and the Winter Soldier being more of an actual story. And then I did truly expect Loki to be a character study, and to a degree it delivered in that it was a character study more than it was an actual show. But they didn't give it a story.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing happened. And anything that happened absolutely could have been bundled in. It will be, I imagine it will be touched on in the first, you know, max 15 minutes of Multiverse of Madness. And that will have been all that needed to happen, because they're not going to expect that everyone went and saw the show. And frankly, I don't know that people who come back, if people watch Multiverse of Madness and then go back and watch the show, I don't imagine they'll gain much.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it comes down to, is of the three shows, this one felt the least consequential, both in, you know, it's in story stakes, but also just overall, I was like, nothing happened. There's no... We've set up things to come. That's great. But nothing happened. We didn't get any resolution for, you know, they posed a situation, played around in the sandbox, and then it rained. So we covered the sandbox, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly put. And this is what I kind of call Ultronitis. You know, to me, the major, well, one of major sins of Avengers 2 Age of Ultron, although there were some good parts, was it felt like they just hit pause on the movie to set up a number of the next round of, like, Thor movie, Captain America movie, etc. And let's contrast it, for example, like in WandaVision, Monica Rambeau has a fantastic arc. Her, we get kind of an origin story for her. We get to see her make major decisions. We get to see her have major issues she goes through. And at the end of the story, we get a very clear connection for her into the thing that she's next to be into, probably Secret Wars or something like that. Is it Secret Wars? Whatever. Secret Invasion.
I thought she was going to be in the Marvel.
Secret Invasion. Yeah, maybe that. But clearly, like, we get a set. She's going up to space. You know, she's right. She's going to do that. She can do something with the Skrulls, etc. This just felt, like, so tacked on. And, like, it just was... It just really weakened it all. Quick interruption. We are now at...
I have to go, guys.
Okay, sounds good.
I got to go.
Okay. So let me just do this. Yep. So, Paul, there's one more topic you and I are going to get into, but Fox, I know you need to run. Thank you so much for being a great guest. For people who are really excited about hearing more of your thoughts or seeing more of your stuff, what should they be checking out?
Pretty much all social media, y'all. I am VoidFox21 on everything. Come say hi on Instagram, Twitter. I jump on TikTok upon the occasion. And I talk about D&D, cosplay, general nerd nonsense. So absolutely come spend some time with me.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for having me, Matthew. It's been, and Paul, it was wonderful to meet you and have an awesome conversation with you. And I will hopefully catch both of you around later.
Likewise. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much. The phrase, thank you, Daddy Disney, will live forever in superhero ethics.
That is my legacy.
There you go.
That's all I'm here for. I have delivered and I'm satisfied.
Awesome. So, Paul, let's kind of do the last thing was, obviously, to some extent, this is meant to be Loki's redemption story. And mm-hmm. we get, Loki has this beautiful moment with Sylvie where he just, it's about Sylvie, but where he just says, like, you know, I no longer care about all the things I used to care about. I just care about you and, like, making sure you're okay. What did you think of Loki's character arc?
I felt like it felt weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt for a lot of the show, I felt like we were watching Ragnarok Loki.
Yeah.
And yet this Loki did not experience all those things. Yes, this Loki watched the tape of those experiences, but like, how much is that like living those moments? Mm-hmm. I would guess not very much exactly like them, you know? So I felt like this Loki kind of evolved rapid fire the way you can kind of expect to happen in stories. But if there were like a montage of things and there was a lot that happened that we didn't see, I feel like I would have bought that more.
Yeah.
You know, I think this Loki kind of becoming like good guy Loki is a little bit like, I don't know. Like, I'm not really sold on it. And I also feel like they didn't put the work in there. And part of it was because they'd already done the work through multiple films.
Mm-hmm.
So it felt like it would just be kind of redundant. And that's one of the problems with kind of resetting a character earlier in their timeline. And so, yeah, I just felt like I didn't quite buy it. And at the end, then I think Loki makes a bad decision in terms of, you know, not stabbing the autocrat.
Right.
But I mean, I enjoyed spending time,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it didn't, in terms of the substance, there was development, but it felt like the development was more, it was interesting, but I didn't feel like it took me from point A to point K.
Yeah. I think that's a really good way to put it. And especially 'cause we did see all the growth, but I mean, even post Ragnarok Loki, I don't feel was even as far along as this Loki wound up, you know, in terms of the...
Right.
Like, he makes the sacrifice somewhat... Well, not even a sacrifice, but, like, he decides... he risks his life and loses his life because of his, like, desire to help protect Thor and the Asgardians and himself, to be honest. Like, he probably doesn't believe Thanos is going to keep him alive. And to me, like, even then, he still feels like kind of... He's the trickster who's learned to do some good things, but he's still the trickster, you know? To me, this is, for Star Wars fans, he's gone from being Cad Bane to becoming Hondo, you know? Hondo's a good guy,
That's fair.
He's still a scoundrel. And, like, to me, Loki should still be a scoundrel.
Yeah.
Whereas now he just becomes, like, generic hero number six who will do the things for the people he cares about.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me also the part of it that really lost me, and it's too bad because this should have been such an epic moment, is one of the Lokis who we didn't see have any real growth was classic Loki. Old man Loki. We saw him be like, you know, somewhat more reflective than some of the others, and like, yes, he's kind of like, I want this all to end. But his act of self-sacrifice at the end of like getting the attention of the smoke monster to help them out, I felt like I needed a little bit more there. You know, I maybe more of like him having a like, look, I want to die anyway, so this is a way to die with glorious purpose. And he does shout out glorious purpose. But it just felt like one more way that they just really never, they told us, they didn't show us. This show felt a lot of, especially on the ethical questions, like it's tell but not show.
Yeah, I don't feel quite the same in terms of classic Loki, mm-hmm. because I feel like when classic Loki is introduced to us, that's sort of what I get out of that character.
Right.
I feel like that character is already kind of in that spot. Mm-hmm. They're maybe not with a lot of hope.
Right.
But I do feel like they are, once given that hope by Sylvie and, you know, 2012 Loki or TVA Loki or whatever, yeah. I think that made sense to me. I bought that.
That's fair.
Although it's like, oh, you killed off the old dude. Okay.
Yeah.
Like that one again, that feels very Star Wars to me.
Well, too. Yeah. The black guy is the traitor and the old guy is the one who has to die nobly, which...
Yeah, great.
Honestly, if they flipped it, I think honestly, yeah, if the black guy
the other way would be worse.
If the black one had to die to save the two white, that would be worse in some ways. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's just all bad. That's the trouble is like once you've told so many stories that have certain problematic aspects, mm-hmm. like those aspects wouldn't necessarily be so problematic in isolation.
Right.
But once it's like, you know, once a third Netflix show kills off its old wise black dude,
yeah,
it's like you're like, okay, like,
yeah, we're definitely doing a thing there.
Yeah,
to me, the one thing that could have saved it is because I think I never really thought about this until you were talking about it. We have variants all over the place. We have Lokis running around talking to other Lokis. What if Loki got to meet post Ragnarok Loki? You know,
sure, like
that could have been an interesting way to have, if you basically wanted to have Loki have all the emotional growth that Ragnarok Loki did, you're right, watching some things on a screen, but I think maybe connecting with that other Loki or even like Sylvie telling him about, you know,
yeah,
what if Sylvie and Sylvie's timeline had gone through Ragnarok? Well, no, that wouldn't happen because she got pruned way earlier, but time is too hard.
I don't even know. Yeah. One other thing I'll say is shows and movies based on villains are way too often set up as those villains being against other bigger villains. Yep. And thus they're cast as heroes. Yeah. And like, just give me a show where a villain gets to be a villain and like, let's do it. You know, like, the Harley Quinn show, which you recommended. And I watched the first season and mostly enjoyed it. I have some thoughts. Mm-hmm. I've always got some thoughts, but you know, in the beginning, I was like, oh, they're robbing rich people. Because of course they are. Because we can be like, oh, these assholes on a yacht or whatever. You know, like, Joker and Harley. But then as the show went on, it's like, she did some bad stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is more like a show about a villain who's like an anti-villain or an anti-hero or whatever. But like, she's a villain.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And that's cool. And she gets to be a protagonist. It doesn't mean she's like all bad, but... You know, I do have a, that actually kind of sets up the last quote that I think I would bring.
Let me just comment on that first.
Yeah, go ahead. Please do.
I very much agree with you. We talked before about how that was one of my biggest complaints with WandaVision is I think the character of Wanda is in this wonderful gray space of incredibly sympathetic, but doing incredible harm and also having been set up by other people. And like, is Wanda a villain? Is she not? Is she somewhere in the gray area? That is a great question. And saying, well, Agatha is worse and the cop who shoots at kids are worse.
Yeah.
Terrible way to answer it, you know?
Totally agree. I feel like Wanda's not a villain. She's a person who's doing harm.
Right. And to me, that's the thing. Is like, let's explore where she is. But if the way that you want to tell us that she's not that bad is just by giving a bigger bad, like,
Yeah. Totally agree.
One thing I love that Harley Quinn does so well, I think, is... the dynamic between in the TV show, the dynamic between Harley and Ivy, because Ivy is, I think, very anti-heroic, but is a hero in that Ivy will only use her powers to, you know, kill people who are harming the environment. And with her, it's kind of a like, oh, you didn't recycle, you and your whole family are going to die. Like, there's a level of extremity there that we might question.
right.
That puts her very much into the anti-hero, almost on the line of villain. But the fact that, like, Harley has a similar heart, and Harley wants to do good things. But for Harley, it's like, you're poisoning the environment, you have to die. You're rich people who are stealing, you have to die. You stole my parking spot, you have to die. And Ivy's every now and then like, let's kind of rate, you know.
I
love how many times Harley kills people who, not out of maliciousness, but just out of like, oops.
And like, like, she's just homicidal and sociopathic.
Basically. And the dynamic between the two of them is so good to explore in terms of villain stuff. So with that, let's go to the Harley Quinn of the Stranded Panda Network. What does Ashley have to say?
Very good. Nice transition. On redemption. Mostly on redemption. Yep. The show had the charm and cheeky demeanor from Loki that we're used to, but it did feel like a different Loki. By the end, we do have that version of the caring Loki we had in Ragnarok, because I feel like we are supposed to see that no matter what. Maybe that's sort of an idea about the identity of Loki, what makes a Loki Loki, I don't know. Our Loki is not inherently bad. It's just a representation of what a child with a complex grows up to be, and feeling like you've gone too far or made too many mistakes for forgiveness, so you double down on the evil side you think everyone expects from you. The first half had a lot of character building, and I think the second half of the season did a good job showcasing a grand sense of scale of everything that is really going on up in this John.
Yeah. What's your take on Ashley's point there?
So like, there's a line from Loki. No one bad is truly bad, and no one good is truly good. And like, I don't like. I just think bad and good are subjective terms, and like, I don't totally agree with the sentiment, but it's somewhat in the spirit of truth. Like, I would say more like everybody does something, some harm, and everybody does some things. Most people do things that, everybody does some things that help some people, right? And, you know, people have different levels of compassion and, you know, whatever else. But, I do feel like we did end up with, you know, that kind of Ragnarok Loki. And as you said, even further along. And I think that's fair. I think that's like at the very end where, you know, I think Loki is, he's not trying to protect, you know, the genocide. He's basically saying like, well, is the other thing worse? And like, maybe, but like, you know, like you should kill the guy first. I don't know. I'm not usually like kill the guy first, but in this case, I'm kind of just like, like, you know, get down with your bad villain self.
I'd be like, just end the dictatorship first. Like, you know, end that. There's, you know,
if there's another way of doing it, go ahead.
But given that we actually never have any explanation of how he has power over time, like, he doesn't sort of hand Loki and Sylvie the levers of a book and be like, here's what you do. But, you know, I think that's a very good point. And Ashley, I think, makes a very interesting case here. And I wish Ashley was here to respond to you know, for us to debate with. But honestly, I think if I go back and listen to my discussions with Ashley about Kylo Ren, pretty much the same conversation, because I think to me Kylo Ren and Loki in their redemption arcs feel very, very similar in that in both cases I agree with Ashley, but I think there's a fascinating thing to be said there about, like, you know, is someone just purely evil, or is this a person who, you know, had this incredibly traumatic childhood, had all these terrible things happen to them, has been, like, Mobius, like, kind of talked about, you know, all the ways in which Loki has been kind of like raised to be this force. And I think that would be so, like, what does it mean to be a god of mischief? Like, your job is to screw up and to screw with things. Like, so why do people get mad at you for that? Like, there's so much good stuff to explore there. But with both Kylo Ren and with Loki, I feel like there's a real danger of saying, well, we got to hear their sympathetic, very sympathetic story, so they're not villains. But all these other people are clearly villains. When I often think, I don't know if the difference is that Loki and Kylo Ren have a sympathetic story and everyone else does, or just that Loki and Kylo Ren we got to hear their story, and we didn't get to hear the others. Also, that Loki and Kylo Ren are very nice to look at in a way that not every villain is.
I thought that's where you were going to go with it.
I think that's a smaller part, but I do think that's a part of it. Yeah. I definitely have heard... I remember there was a discussion about this before the show came out, and people were talking about, like, should, you know, Loki become a hero in this? Should he still the villain? And someone wrote in, no one as pretty as Tom Hiddleston can ever be a true villain. And it got, like, 20 likes. That's a thing out there.
I do not co-sign
that. and I think it's... I mean, there's nothing gendered about that to me. That happens with all characters of all genders and stuff like that.
Sure.
But
he's definitely a thief because he stole my heart.
You know,
I don't know. That's the quote.
Do think that perhaps the people who question whether Harley Quinn is really a villain and the people who find Harley Quinn incredibly attractive, there's probably a strong Venn diagram there too, you know? She's a much beloved character. She's a very much, you know, shipped character. And she's a character, therefore, who people want to be able to root for.
Yeah.
So I think that's about all I kind of wanted to get into. Paul, any kind of last comments you wanted to bring up?
No, I actually just wanted to mention on one more of the one sentence that Ashley said that I actually really, I think I was thinking something like this or saying something like this recently, but I liked how she expresses it. The, like, feeling like you've gone too far or made too many mistakes and, like, are not either not worthy of forgiveness or not going to be able to earn forgiveness and thus kind of doubling down on the evil side or on the, it's kind of like, you know, going all in on, like, well, once people see me this way, I think I was making the point with regard to, like, you know, supporters of certain political movements or whatever, where it's like, well, I've already gone this far, right. You know, and kind of feeling like there's not a way back. Mm-hmm. And I guess this Loki, it feels like doesn't have that anymore. Like it seemed like there was, and then there wasn't, you know, I feel like I just watched a little bit of the end of Thor, the first one, and it feels like that's part of sort of what's going on with Loki, right. You know, and I like at the very end where, you know, Thor is like trying to save Loki and then he's like trying to tell Odin like, no, like I could have done this thing that actually old school Odin was really into, like
yes.
Genociding peoples or conquering them or whatever. And then Odin's like, no, Loki. And it's like, no, you should be like, it's okay, Loki. You don't have to do that. I love you, whatever. But he's just like, no, Loki. And Loki's like, all right, I'll just fall into the abyss then. And he feels like there's no way back.
I mean, in some ways, it's one more reason why I'm so sad that the Loki-Morpheus relationship kind of got dropped in favor of Loki-Sylvie. Because, like, everything we're talking about right now is basically a treatise on... is basically an analysis of the whole question of restorative justice versus retributive justice, you know, in terms of like, because if you tell someone like, yes, you were bad, you're going to be punished because you were so bad. All right. That tells someone something. If you tell someone like, look, you caused harm, that's not okay, but we believe you can be better and we want to help you get to a place where you can be better. Like, it sounds like such Care Bear silliness, but there's so much truth. Like, believing in people makes helps them believe in themselves, and now I'm just all the more disappointed because I feel like if that had really been the story of Mobius believing in Loki, which happens, you know, Mobius challenging everyone else who doesn't want to believe in Loki, that could have been so much more powerful.
Yeah, I thought the dynamic between the two of them was very powerful. I found it more compelling than the dynamic between Sylvie and Loki. I really enjoyed watching Sylvie kick ass, and I thought Sylvie was an interesting character. And if maybe they made Sylvie as a character who, you know, clearly declared her own gender as an expression of herself, that could have been super powerful. But, like, instead they decide to go into the Loki-Sylvie, you know, romantic dynamic and then kind of kick Mobius to the curb. And like, it felt like a show to me that like I wasn't super interested in the first place, but then it did come up with a bunch of things that were potentially very compelling. And to me it feels like it was a little bit misbilled, and it kind of underdelivered, you know, on a lot of things that could have been very special to a lot of people.
I think that's a very good way to put it. I think it's a good place to close as well. So Paul, you're obviously creating a lot of content on Twitch and YouTube. Tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, I've got Zen Madman on Twitch. I stream almost every day, usually 10 a.m. Pacific and sometimes like 2 p.m. in the afternoon Pacific. I'm also Zen Madman on Twitter, and I have a Zen Madman poker channel, and I'll start making some other content perhaps sooner or later, but for now, mostly on this podcast and Star Wars Universe podcast, which I recently hosted an entire episode.
Yeah, Paul stepped up to the plate in a great way. I was on vacation for a couple of days. I did not want to have to figure out getting wire. I was in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I did not want to have to figure out finding a place that had strong enough wireless to be able to record, let alone just taking the time out of my vacation. And Paul's able to step up. That was awesome. Thank you so much. Check out Paul's Twitch and YouTube. They're great. They're both very entertaining. If you want to learn about poker, it's a lot of fun, but also just, I think it's just fun to watch. You'll often hear me in there trying to ask questions, sometimes trolling, sometimes intentionally trolling. And I'm also going to sometimes be a guest on Paul's Twitch. Paul's often a guest on mine as he's kind of mentoring me with poker. And of course, you can check out all of my podcasts and other creations at theethicalpanda.com. That's where I do the Star Wars podcast as well as this podcast. And all of these are part of the Stranded Panda podcast network. Definitely check those all out, strandedpanda.com. The MCU cast did great analysis of Loki. But yeah, so definitely check out strandedpanda.com as well. They do great content on Loki. If you want to hear people be a little more positive about Loki than we were, although they do get in some critical points as well. Great content there also about Fast and the Furious movies, but anything the geeks are talking about, they're probably covering it there. So thank you everybody so much for being a part of this, and have a great day.
Something clever.
This way comes...